what better topic, really, than electricity? It's been front of mind for so many of us, dreading the power bill coming in the time when it finally lands. And given the huge increases we've seen in the cost of energy, going solar has probably never looked more attractive. And so I want to hear whether you've made the transition or are thinking about it. If there are questions that you have about going solar, or there's something standing in your way, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 1-300-222-702. You can text 0467-922-702. And we've got two passionate advocates of solar here to explain how the whole process works. We have Brent Clark, he's CEO and founder of WattBlock, an organisation that provides independent advice to help transition apartment blocks to sustainable energy. Brent, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Dom.
I'm a former Strata chair, and so the complexity of trying to get all the ducks in a row and get panels on the roof, I can imagine that's quite challenging.
It certainly is, and I'm also a former Strata chair, and that's how I came about moving into this area.
There you go.
Having a three-day power outage for all 40 units in our apartment block and realising we had a local energy crisis. And, now 10 years later, I'm still working in this area trying to help the Stratas move forward.
Yeah, I can understand how 3 days without power for 40 people might have got the votes you needed to do something about
exactly.
it. That makes sense. We also have with us Ursula Hogman, who's a volunteer with Zero Emissions Sydney North. It's a not-for-profit association of volunteers that has a passion for taking practical steps to reducing emissions. And there's been so much talk about cutting emissions, Ursula, but I mean, solar is such a big part of the picture here, isn't it?
Yes, great to be here, Dom. We've recently seen Australia's enormous enthusiasm for reducing emissions, saving costs, and getting solar, whether it's home, school or business, is a really key part of that.
Now, you're a lawyer by day, Ursula. Why did you get involved with this group?
Good question, Dom. I have been concerned about climate issues and also Australia really embracing the opportunities that we have as well as we can. So, for work, I've done a lot of financing and capital raising for projects, but I also wanted to try and use these skills pro bono in the community.
Right.
Because so many people have getting solar on their to-do list, but there's just enough complexity and hurdles that, sometimes it sits on the to-do list. And so we thought, well, what can we do to make it really straightforward and easy and help people just get it on their roof?
Yeah, well, so a few weeks ago I did a Sunday brunch with Saul Griffith, who's been inviting not just our government but the Biden administration on going solar, and he's very upbeat about the possibilities for Australians, really, not just to try and take the environmental benefit, but actually really improving our quality of life by
yes.
going solar. And there's lots of people who've already called in to chat about this. But Brent, let's start with your experience in going solar within Strata, because it can be very complicated trying to do things on common property, but a lot of us live in apartment buildings, and I do. So, for instance, if I'm thinking, well, how would I bring in solar panels? And I just can imagine a whole series of complexities and regulations that would make that difficult.
Yeah, look, the first thing is in Strata, you've got every conceivable type of building. You've got low-level townhouses, which are much closer to like a normal house.
Mm.
You've got converted warehouses that have been turned into apartment buildings. You've got medium-rise, high-rise. You've got precincts that have been built, which have a combination of townhouse and apartment buildings. Look, one positive thing we saw in February 2021 was the New South Wales government actually lowered the number of votes that you need for solar.
Okay.
In the Strata Schemes Act, they created a sustainability infrastructure motion or resolution that can be passed, and it lowered the voting to just 50% of the unit entitlements.
That's a huge, it's two-thirds otherwise, isn't it?
Yeah, otherwise it would have been 75%.
75%?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
gosh, that's
yeah.
a very high bar.
Yeah. So then if you think about it, if you're in a townhouse complex, this week up in Newcastle, a townhouse complex of nine, they needed to equally or fairly divide the roof space for individual solar systems. If you're in like quite a well-serviced building with a lot of common area expenditure. We've now got some apartment buildings that have solar and battery systems running the lifts, you know, the pools, the recreation areas, things like that. And then you've got innovative technologies where you can have one shared solar system on the roof that connects into individual apartments as well. So all those combinations are possible. They've been done in strata buildings. But if we look compared to, say, houses, where you might have 25% of houses with solar now, you move to apartments and strata and it's still about 0.7%.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, where I live, there are solar panels on the roof for the pool in a strata complex, but that's it. And there's an awful lot of roof space because it's kind of mostly townhouses. And you sort of look at that and think, well, why can't there be solar panels all the way around and saving everyone on their power bills? So good to hear that that it's been easier to get it over the line with strata. I guess, what kind of groups do you help, Ursula, and what advice do you give to people who say, look, we want to do this, how do we do it?
So we run free events for just regular homes, you know, householders. We also run free events for people getting solar for strata. In fact, we've done these with Brent. We also have information about solar for business and the case studies. The case studies are really strong for business because you tend to be using your solar in the day as you generate it.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. No batteries needed if the lights are off at night.
Yes. And we've also set up a zero emission schools network in our area and can assist with getting solar on schools. Once again, schools are using their electricity in the day when they're generating it, so great use of roof space for schools as well.
Yeah, that makes all kinds of sense. Here on the Weekend Show, we're talking about the transition to solar. How do you get the panels up there? What are the economics? What are the barriers? 1-300-222-702. Let's start with a call from Simon in Stanmore, who's very upbeat about this. Hello, Simon.
G'day, Doc. How are you?
Yeah, good. What's your experience been?
Well, I've had solar on the roof since 2018, and before that I was paying about $2,300 a year in electricity.
Gosh.
The main, only two of us, and we have a large koi pond which runs 24/7 electricity, so that was sucking a fair bit of electricity. Anyway, long story short, last year we decided, like a lot of people, that we were going to go over to an electric vehicle, which we did, and we got a battery at the same time. And I have not had an electricity bill that I've had to pay since July last year.
Good, well timed, Simon.
Yeah, I'm expecting to get a small one, probably over the winter months, that might be in the vicinity of, you know, $15 or $20 or something like that. I mean, I may have egg on my face when I actually get the bill, but, you know, it's just been a dramatic thing. And, you know, people go, how are you going to charge your car? Well, I'm mainly trickle charging mine at home during off-peak times, where the rates are very, very low. And it's just been a dream. Best decision I ever made.
It sounds very good. Can I just ask, though, it's really the cost that's my question, because I imagine that infrastructure costs a fair bit, and Ursula's going to comment on this in a second, but do you mind telling us how much you had to pay out to install the system? Ballpark.
Yeah, well, when I did, in 2018, when we got 15 panels up, I remember, and an inverter, I think it was around about $9,000. And then when we got the battery, which isn't one of those famous name ones, but it's one that's just working extremely well, that and another six panels, which were, had more grunt in them, was an extra 12, I think it is.
Okay.
I think it is.
So 20, so it's less than 10 years it's paying off on old prices by the sounds of things, Simon.
Yeah, on old prices it is, but if we discount, you know, the initial 15 panels and look at what, you know, the battery and the new six panels are costing us, I've calculated that's going to be paid off in about 3.5 years.
Well, that's a very positive incentive. I just want to have Ursula's thoughts on this. Ursula, you've, I'm sure, heard a few stories like Simon's.
Yes, Dom, and I'd completely agree with what Simon has said. One of our good news stories, whenever we run our free events, is the cost. People that looked into it in the past are always pleasantly surprised about what the cost of solar panels are now. Mm. Now, the cost does depend on how long your panel warranty is.
Right.
Can go from about a 10 to 25 year warranty. But as a rule of thumb, you're paying about $1,000 a kilowatt for a good quality panels. And so an average house may be getting, say, a 5 to 7 kilowatt system. So that's from $5,000 to $7,000. And you know, people are consistently pleasantly surprised when we say you can get 5 kilowatt solar system on your house for $5,000. And then prices are, you know, increase the longer the warranty you get or the larger the solar power system that you get.
Okay, so it pays itself off quite nicely, but of course you then need the money to be able to put into it. Fabian Sexton from Stanmore, also in Sydney, Council Heritage Rules forbid solar panels on street-facing rooftops, he says. Ursula?
We've spoken to various councils about that. One piece of good news is that even if you can't get solar on your north-facing roof, because that might be the road-facing side, east and west are still really effective places to put your solar, and even south. So, for example, if you have an east and west array, you're only losing about 10 to 20% efficiency, but you're also getting generating solar longer.
Okay.
So if all you can get is east and west, that's still an absolutely fantastic solar power system.
All right, so there are options there. Thanks for the call, Simon. That's a very positive example. And Brent, I guess from a strata perspective, there's sinking funds that it might be a little bit easier to make these kinds of long-term investments.
Yeah, that's right. So if you think about all the strata schemes in New South Wales, and that's probably 100,000 of them, they all have to have a capital works fund, and strata levies are going into those, and they also need to have a 10-year capital works plan.
Right.
And the challenge is just getting people to start thinking on a 10-year horizon, because the average person lives in an apartment for 9 years. So if you're actually using that capital works fund, you've got a plan and you're thinking, okay, 3 years from now, we'll put the solar panels in. 5 years from now, we'll put in the batteries. Two years from now, we'll set up a bank of electric vehicle charge stations in the basement car park that can be shared. A few years down the track, we'll give everyone in the building the ability to charge at their own individual car space. And let's start thinking, as Saul Griffiths from The Big Switch would say, about switching out those gas hot water plants and moving to electric heat pumps. Now, if you just have a look at all those projects, it's like, well, they're all going to increase the electricity, but that's a driver for having a bigger solar system. And if we look at the caller, Simon, who came in, see how he actually put solar in once and then extended the size.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what we want people to start thinking about is, well, let's go a bit bolder. Let's go bigger on day one.
Okay. And if you want to hear the Sunday brunch we did with Saul Griffiths, by the way, it's up on the ABC website, and a fascinating conversation with a very passionate advocate of solar. Dom Knight with you at 22 minutes past 10 on ABC Radio Sydney. And across New South Wales, our guests this morning, Ursula Hogben, who volunteers with Zero Emissions Sydney North. And you've been hearing from Brent Clark, who's the CEO and founder of WattBlock and helps strata schemes make the conversion. We've got Natasha on the line from Neutral Bay. Hi, Natasha, how are you doing? Natasha, are you there?
Hello.
There we go. Now, you need some advice. What do you need to do?
I do need some advice. We are desperate to do solar. We pay an embarrassing amount of in a power bill. Tried to get solar, but we have a copper roof, and I can't find anyone who will supply solar on a copper roof. And I don't know what to do. If I can't find a supplier, can't do it myself.
Okay, Brent, what do you reckon? Copper roofs, eh?
Yeah, look, roofing types are a barrier. And, you know, we've got tile, we've got colour bond. Colour bond's very good for installing on. Tile, great. You hit these roadblocks sometimes with, cases like copper. Now, have a look. There's actually a flexible solar skin now. You can read a bit about it. It's on the Maritime Museum down here at Darling Harbour. But this is a new type of solar panel. It's about a third of the weight of traditional glass panels, and it can actually be glued down onto roofs with adhesive without a racking system. So the technology is evolving. You know, these newer technologies for solar, they cost a little bit more, but you know, we just heard also previously the thing with heritage buildings and not being able to have solar panels facing the street with roofing type like that as well. Have a think about solar tiles next time.
That's what I was going to ask about. Yeah, if you can put them in the tiles.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, look, it's definitely a challenge, but the technologies are coming.
Okay, Natasha, go and check it out. And in the Maritime Museum, by the sounds of things. A text in here, LT in Illawarra says, this is exactly where I am, trying to work out how you do it, given the power prices. I couldn't have had a better way to convince people to get cracking with this, I guess. John in Tarramurra is asking about the staging of this. Is it okay, he asks, to commence the rooftop solar journey with hot water? Can you be incremental about it and do one step at a time? Actually, this is the kind of thing you advise people on.
Yes, it is. And I think the question is aimed at putting an actual hot water solar system rather than solar panels. Look, solar panels generate so much electricity per panel now that generally speaking, people just fill their roof with solar panels and then direct that solar energy where they need.
Right.
So rather than take up more roof space with a less efficient system, the general trend is you put as many panels as you can on, and then if you need it for the hot water or you need it for your EV or you need it for your pool, you've got a really large system on your roof generating electricity.
Okay, so it's better to actually do it better.
To do the panels.
The texter here makes a very good point that, I mean, this is all good, but what about for those renting it on low income? And I guess, is there a policy challenge here where, if you, given the amount of money that goes into the electricity generation network and the vast expense that's being discussed for potentially new fossil fuel-based power plants, is there some sort of policy model, Brent, that could actually help homeowners and well, landlords is an example that comes to mind, where the benefit would go to the renter? Was there some policy option here where there could be a kind of sinking fund on a government basis, perhaps?
Well, I think we've seen some innovation in this area to help renters around the idea of virtual solar. And so there's another concept called a solar garden, and this can be like a shared community solar precinct. And a renter who doesn't have the right to put solar panels directly on the roof of either the house or apartment that they're renting can actually, you know, buy a share in off-site solar, a virtual power plant that might be, you know, out in Wagga rather than directly on their own roof. So we're starting to see that sort of innovation coming in to help renters.
Ursula?
And Dom, glad to say that we've also had people coming to our events that want to put solar on their rentals because the price has now come down a lot, partly because it's the right thing to do, partly to keep or attract great tenants, partly because they may be able to charge a little more rent, but the benefit can flow to the tenant in terms of lower power bills.
Okay, so that's certainly positive. Mm-hmm. I've got a few texts here about low feed-in prices, 5 cents per kilowatt hour. And presumably that's the amount that you get for feeding into the grid. What's going on here?
So, look, I have to say we were probably spoiled when solar first came in and there were these 60-cent feed-in tariffs, which, look, let's be honest, that was it was at a time where solar panels were very expensive. 10 years ago, look at the price of solar then and now. And what I would be saying to people is the feed-in tariffs were never going to stay at that high level. They were going to always come down to something that represents the value that's being put into the grid. But this is actually the driver for people to, instead of just doing solar, to move to solar and batteries.
Right.
So if instead of, you know, getting a feed-in tariff, pump that solar off your roof into a battery and then use it to offset your peak hour usage after dark. That's where we want to be going.
Also, Don, we remind people that one of the best things you can do is use your solar as you generate it.
Right.
So, you know, you can use timers or just be home to be putting your washing, dishwasher, even your heating and cooling on during the day, and then just, you know, things, old-fashioned things like our grandparents used to do, open the curtains, close the curtains to keep the heat in. So try and use your solar power during the day as much as possible.
Yeah, the time is a very good point. Most dryers and things have time options. Mm. Let's talk to Helen in Kyogle. Hi, Helen.
Oh, yeah, hello.
What's your question?
Well, using it during the day, that is great. But the day that we had a big storm up here about 2 weeks ago and the power went out, we were about 12 hours with no power. But you can't use your solar power.
Brent?
Well, if you don't have a battery, you actually can't use the solar power during a power outage. So it's not providing, a replacement from what's coming in from the grid. The solar's just equalising with what comes in and offsetting what comes in from the grid. So to be able to have some sort of backup and resiliency during a power outage, that you need to get to the solar and battery configuration.
Okay. Look, it's worth noting, it doesn't have to be the very large, expensive battery. There are cheaper battery options that you'd be basically choosing so you can use your solar during a power outage.
Okay. Now, we have absolutely heaps of calls and texts here to deal with, and we need to go to Simon Marnie's chat with Claire Moore and Dave Graining in about 4 minutes. So I'm sure we'll have to revisit this very soon. It's such an important issue. The final thing I want to ask you both about is how to choose a good installer, because this is something that comes up a lot. We've heard of some nightmare stories of things going wrong and people who don't really know what they're doing. Brent, what advice do you give about choosing installers?
Yeah, look, there's something called a Phoenix company that sort of sets up, runs around, installs a lot of solar and then shuts down. And we know this from the construction industry in Australia. So, you know, really do your research, find out about the longevity of the company, because you've got 5,000 solar installers you can choose from. And that's a bit of a minefield. So look at references, go to your not-for-profits like, you know, Zero Emission Sydney North, research online and look for those track records. If you're going to buy an appliance for your kitchen, you probably ask a friend what you think of a particular, brand or whatever. Do the same thing with a solar installer. Ask your friends. You've got friends that have solar on their roof. Did they have a good experience with the installer? So it's really important to do your due diligence. Look at the background of the companies, how long they've been operating.
And I agree with that. And the two main questions we get asked are, what will it cost and who should I install with? We did extensive research on installation, and a couple of things that kept coming up were choose a local company, broadly local from your area, because one, they care about their local reputation, and second, it's easy for them to come to you if there is an issue. Another was definitely not just choosing the cheapest. Think of this as like a kitchen installation. The quality of the installation, the advice you get on where to put it, on what size, and how well it's installed actually really matters. So do get, say, three quotes. Make them ideally from local companies, in your broad area. But also then, if you look online, you can look at the Clean Energy Council. You can look at their reviews online. You can ask people and see, are they a good quality installer?
Okay, so make sure you do your research. And finally, just a lot of us are thinking, well, okay, we might not be able to get solar right now. Maybe that's a project for down the track. But a lot of us are trying to work out who to buy electricity from, given the price spikes. We've got providers saying, don't use us, switch off us. Mm. If they're with you, any thoughts on how to try and use green energy when we're switching around, Brent?
Look, this is a bit of a challenge in our market at the moment because, some people that did go with these more innovative energy retailers, a few of them have said, look, please go away from us. But if you keep looking around, look at the source of the power that the energy retailer is selling. Are they selling you hydropower? Are they selling you what percentage of renewable energy is in their mix? And, as a consumer, try and balance this out and say, look, we know energy prices are going to get larger. We want to kind of match the energy retailer that works for us. What's our consumption pattern? Are we working from home now in a post-COVID era? Are we out of the house during the day? Mm. Look at the mix of the power coming into the grid when you're using it. And there are government websites like Energy Made Easy, which people should go to. They're trusted and they're reliable, and all the power plans are there. So you can type in or even upload a scanned image of your electricity bill into Energy Made Easy, and you'll be given the best energy retailer, and that's government data.
Okay, always good to have the government data. So we've got about 20 seconds.
There's one other resource. You can look at the Independent Green Electricity Guide. It's not so much on price, it's on emissions, but you know, for some people that's something else to take into consideration as
okay.
well.
Look, it's been fascinating speaking with you both. Ursula Hogben from Zero Emissions Sydney North, and they're at zerosydneynorth.org if you want to know more. And Brent Clark is the CEO and founder of WhatBlock. Thank you so much for joining us.